ways to activate our bodies in the short burst and then get that recovery, that restorative effect, that anti-aging effect. And then we're comparing that to meditation, which is going to be more of a, what we call top-down, more of a mental way of putting us into restorative mode. So we'll see. You'll have to look out for that in the on my website and see what we find. So we've talked about some ways we can recognize our attitudes about aging and notice how conscientious we are. We can always change. We used to think personality was fixed and rigid throughout life, but we can always become more mindful, more conscientious. And I've also talked about how we can respond to stress in this positive way. So I've talked about positive stress situations where you stretch yourself and you put yourself in situations that are just a bit uncomfortable so you can cope with them and grow in that way, grow physiologically, turn on anti-aging mechanisms, grow psychologically. There is a way that we can view stressors in this positive way as well. We call this a challenge orientation or a challenge mentality. And that is when we are facing one of these uncomfortable situations, we think this whole set of positive thoughts that may be true. I can cope with this. This is going to go well. I'm going to be happy when it's over. I have a lot to gain. I've got what it takes. Bring it on mentality. So that's what we call a challenge mentality. So filling yourself with those thoughts beforehand is not only going to help you do better, it's going to change your physiological stress response to be more of this positive response. So you can actually assess some of your tendencies, some of these traits we've been talking about. I put some quizzes up on my lab website for you, and we use these in our book. And so if you go to my lab website and you see the telomere effect, you click on that, and it gives you the quizzes that are in the book, the ones that we can make public. So you can take your take a self-assessment quiz to see how conscientious you are, how hostile you are, how much you're likely to feel cynical and distrustful. That's associated with telomere shortening and inflammation. You can take a quiz to look at your stress response style and just notice, what is your automatic tendency? Are you more threatened? Do you immediately think that you're going to be ashamed or do badly? Or do you tend to have more of a positive challenge orientation? So the website is amecenter, that's one word, .ucsf.edu. AME stands for Aging Metabolism Emotions. So it's amecenter.ucsf.edu. And all of this is just to learn about your own tendencies, because we're so used to ourselves, we're often on automatic mode, and we don't have a sense of how our habitual responses are maybe hurting or handicapping us. And once we're aware of them, that can change everything. That mindfulness of how we tend to react is the first and most essential step in then softening our response so that we can surf the waves of life and the stressors that come to us in a more graceful way.
Lecture 14, Positive Behaviors That Slow Aging.
Our next topic is going to be about your social world. We are social mammals, and it turns out that the things that stress us out the most are about relationships. Their interpersonal stress or conflict. I'm going to point out some things we've learned from research that show you how important your social world is. So we've talked a little bit about attitudes, stress responses, and some health behaviors. Now I want you to think about your social landscape. Who do you feel most connected to? And do you talk to or see this person as much as you'd like to? If you see them once a year, and you can project how many years roughly you have left, it gives you a startling sense of how many more times you'll be together. Now, our social connectivity is so important that it's not just how much time we spend physically together, but also how our schema, our model in our head is of how alone versus connected we are. So let me tell you a couple pieces of what I mean by that. When we did a study to see how stressed people got when they just did a lab stressor, we wanted to see if their feelings of social support would buffer that. However connected people felt to others in their life, they weren't in the room with them, might have lived across the country, but if they felt like they had more social support, their stress responses were healthier. They followed that positive stress response curve more. They would go up, they would come down quickly, they had less cortisol secretion overall. So it's kind of the concept that we carry around with us. How alone are we? How separated are we? One thing that mindfulness teaches us is that we are intricately connected to each other, to this earth. It's just hard to see. And especially if we're feeling stressed, if we're feeling down, we get very focused, self-focused. The world closes in and we think about our favorite topic, ourself. And so when we become more mindful and we can see the interconnections that are truly there and how we are connected, that is one of the most freeing and important realizations that can come from a compassionate or mindful practice. And we have now seen for some very interesting studies, for example, that loving kindness, that feeling positive toward other people and feeling compassionate toward ourselves and toward other people is related to better health, is related in some cases to longer telomeres, at least a new study related to telomere lengthening with this kind of meditation practice that makes us feel connected to other people. On the opposite side is loneliness. And loneliness is in part a state of mind, feeling alone, whether you see people or not on a daily basis. This loneliness is actually as big of a risk factor for early death as smoking. We can never remind ourselves enough how important it is for us to be socially connected in positive ways to each other. So it's particularly hard when older people are so isolated. There are 13 million older people living alone, and they rarely see each other. So when we're older, we know that loneliness is a really big predictor of earlier mortality. And so there are these things we can do either for ourselves or encouraging people we care about who live alone. And that is really connecting socially in some way. It might be taking a class, finding a hobby, volunteering, scheduling a phone call each day or a meal together. So these are really important social connections. And without them, we know that people suffer emotionally and physiologically. One of the most interesting areas in understanding us as social beings and our health is that we transmit emotions to others. We have emotion contagion happening all the time around us. So we've been studying this pretty carefully because we're interested in how people stay resilient to stress. So when they're living, for example, with someone with a chronic condition, if they're a caregiver, how do they stay positive? Now, we know that when couples are studied, if they tend to have more positive emotions, the other member of the couple does too. If one of the couples tends to have higher cortisol, the other partner does too. And so we see these correlations. We move around in our mood and our physiology with the people that we're with. So we know this happens with couples. We know this happens somewhat with families, and it may happen with people you work with, people you're close to, people you care about. You are influencing their mood and they're influencing yours. So that's really something for us to take note of and take responsibility of, because we can use that for positive effects in the world. And certainly I've tried to not bring in as much stress to my workplace and to my staff after really realizing how we really set the tone for others around us, not just for ourselves. So this emotion contagion is something we've been studying in our families who are caregiving, who are taking care of a child with autism or a developmental disorder. And what we found is super interesting. We found that the mothers who feel that they're very influenced by their family's emotions. So if their husband comes home in a bad mood, they're more likely to get in a bad mood. If their child has had a bad day, they're much more likely to have rub off, to have negative feelings themselves. So what we see is that some people have more independence, that when they notice the negative mood of their family, they're less influenced by it. So it doesn't mean they're less compassionate or caring, but it doesn't actually cause them to just, like a pinball, to adopt that negative mood. And that takes mindfulness. That takes remembering that you can be compassionate, that you can be there for someone and hold their suffering and empathize and listen without you going down that same rabbit hole or entering that same blue state of mind. So the people who report that they're more independent of others' emotions have much better mental health and physical health. So this is something that I believe is probably take some mindfulness and awareness to be compassionate, but to not let yourself have empathic distress when you take on emotions and you feel distress. And that can lead also to burnout. We see that professionally with teachers and therapists, that when they are easily adopting the emotions of the person that they're trying to care for, they tend to get much more burnt out and feel numbness, demoralization, and really just lack of ability to keep empathizing. One of the questions that we started with is, what do you want the rest of your life to be like? How do you want to spend your time? Who do you want to spend your time with? So that leads us to this big question of, what is your mission here on earth? Doesn't have to be some grandiose thing, but what matters to you? How do you want to be living now that you have more wisdom, more control over your life, hopefully have some more time, or at least can create more time to reflect on these important questions? Purpose in life is something that has just arisen in this aging and longevity field as such an important factor for our healthy aging and our happiness, our good mental health. In one of these big studies of U.S. populations, they found that people who feel more purpose tend to live longer, healthier, regardless of whether they're retired or not. And that's regardless of depression or positive or negative mood. So there's something about meaning and purpose that transcends feelings and mood that really does directly impact our health. Purpose in life is stress buffering. It's related to having less overall cortisol in our hair. That's one way we measure it. It's related to having less inflammation in our blood. It's related to having less just buildup of kind of chronic disease risk factors over the next 10 years. So if you have high purpose in life, you're going to age less over 10 years. And that's partly because you feel more control over your health. At least that's what some of the studies show. We can measure control over health, but it's probably much more profound than that. So if you want to measure your purpose in life, you can ask yourself, what is it when I wake up that matters to me about my day? Do I feel like my plans are important and what I do is important? Do I have things to look forward to? So the scales ask things like that. It's more on a daily basis. So you can take a scale to assess your own purpose in life and get your score if you'd like, And again, that's on my lab website, amecenter.ucsf.edu. So I want to end with having you really take stock of your day. So we've talked a lot about big trajectories and thinking about new things to try and how we want to maybe shift priorities. But what it really comes down to in the biology of aging is also the little things we do every day. They add up and they are the levers on cell aging. The little habits we do add up over decades and predict, for example, how long our telomeres are when we're older, how much inflammation we have. So when you think of these health behaviors, rather than thinking of a big change, a big shift in diet, or all of a sudden going to the gym every day, think about small changes that you know you can do, that you can implement into your day. So for example, think about a time of day where you might be able to be active for 10 minutes more than your typical day. That might be right when you get up. That might be during a lunch break. That might be taking a walk with someone. So those little built-in pieces of wellness that you can add to your day in a structural way are what matter. And those are what we can sustain and keep. I tend to think of them as stapling. Let's staple in a little burst of activity for you. And so stapling means you want to say, what is it going to come after? My day already has, for example, a lunch break, or it already has a commute in it. So you staple this activity right after something that you know is going to happen so that you remember, so that it becomes a habit. It becomes the landscape of your day. A mind-body activity is just like that too. So being able to do that right when you wake up is important. We found that when people wake up, if they feel joy, that sets a different trajectory for their day, that their cortisol rise right after waking is not as high, that their cell aging looks better. Whereas if you wake up feeling stressed, feeling like you don't have control, dreading the day, that is related to the opposite. And so, you know, we're habitual creatures. We may wake up, we tend to be the type who just wakes up with dread. But when you're mindful of that and you notice that, that's when you take control and you say, and now I'm going to spend a few minutes in bed still thinking about something I'm looking forward to today, thinking about something I'm grateful for. These are strong, potent, positive little exercises that you can build into your day. You can develop realistic daily rituals that you can maintain. And in our book, we go on and on about things like sleep, how to get better quality sleep, and all the different rituals that you might add. How do you influence sleep? You influence the time before sleep, those few hours right before sleep, like having a curfew on screens, not dealing with stressful discussions or activities, things like that. So now we're getting into the nitty-gritty, and these are things you can read about on the web or in our book, or you may already have these types of small behaviors, but it's these that add up to create these restorative periods. We've been talking about restorative sleep or periods of relaxation when you're not having to cope with things. So your rate of aging, the amount of inflammation you have in your blood, and how quickly your telomeres will shorten, how long your mitochondria are going to stay like energizer bunnies, these are partly under your control. You determine your day and how you're going to view events. And while we have our automatic reactions, you get to control your secondary reaction. So I'd like to end by having you take out your pad and your pen again. And I'm just going to go through some of these main points about mindful aging and have you decide what you're going to do, what fits for you, what you're going to do starting tomorrow morning. So one thing we talked about is positizing your attitudes about aging. Thinking about someone who's inspiring to you, who is older, and realizing that is a path and a possibility for you. Catching and noticing your negative stereotypes of aging when you do have them. building in more conscientious behavior. And so for me, for example, I'm just, you know, a late person. I'm doomed to always be late, right? Well, no. So when I can actually be planful and mindful of how much that stresses me out and stresses out people around me, I actually change my day dramatically by arriving early, by building ahead, that kind of mindful, planful, conscientious behavior that makes everyone happier. We also talked about not just positive attitudes, but positive stress. Where's the positive stress in your life? What are you going to add that is going to be a short-term positive stressor for your body or your mind or both? And noticing when you do have these kind of threat responses. So being mindful of how we carry around stress with us. Even when we're not in the middle of dealing with a stressor, we might be planning on it, worrying about it. Just this kind of repetitive, we call perseverative thinking. It's just so common. And once you can develop the habit of looking in and getting intimate with your mind, you notice this, and that gives you the ability to build in spaciousness, to let your body go into restorative mode, to laugh at your thoughts when you notice you're having self-critical thoughts again. So write down a time of day that you're going to spend tomorrow where you're going to work on turning something that's typically stressful into a positive stressor. Where in your day, in the landscape of your day, are the stressful events? So for a lot of people, it's morning, it's commuting, it's dealing with certain meetings. You know that's going to happen. It's just so predictable, right? So this gives you the opportunity to plan ahead and to practice a different way of approaching those moments and viewing them as challenges and positive stressors. It certainly helps if you've done a mind-body activity, if you've built up your mind-body reserve, if you have more vagal tone, you know, in this kind of restorative base that you're coming from. Think about now your relationships. Are there ones that stress you out, that you don't need, or that you don't need to have exposure to as much? Are there people that you haven't connected with that you feel particularly grateful for that you can express that to? Showing gratitude is something that is not automatic. It's not something we're typically raised to think about and realize how important it is. But I've become much better, for example, in my post 50 years of doing things like writing a card and telling someone how much what they did meant to you or how much they mean to you. So in general, tomorrow, think about how you want to be, how you want to show up to other people and to yourself, and try to align your intentions with your day. So starting from right when you wake up, noticing your automatic thoughts, then shifting the trajectory toward more positive thoughts. What's right in your life? What are you grateful for? And then having that kind of day that's more restorative and stressful. So every day I like to think of base pairs, how we want to maintain our telomeres. We can have a day that's wearing, where we're having more toxic stress than positive stress, where we're eating more pro-inflammatory and oxidative meals. And those are wearing us out sooner. So you want to think of balancing that. And what can you add to your day in terms of the health behaviors, in terms of the social connections, in terms of positive stress that actually balances you and keeps your cells from aging as quickly? So I hope that at least one of these points will stay with you and that you'll staple something and that you'll bring one of these positive attitudes with you after you finish this lecture. Thank you so much for your attention, your reflection, and your commitment to your own life and your own mindful aging.
In the next two segments, Jessica Graham will show you how to bring mindfulness into the bedroom.
There are a lot of really good reasons for bringing mindfulness into sex. One of them is studies have shown that you can actually become more aware of pleasure in your body. You can address issues around sexual dysfunction and erectile dysfunction, and you can have more connection with your partner.
This lecture contains mature themes and may not be suitable for all audiences. Lecture 15, Mindful Sex, Being Present in Your Body.
Jessica Graham is one of the most courageous, authentic, and wise meditation teachers I've met. Her boldness in diving into the topic of mindfulness and sexuality is unparalleled. Her philosophy is accessible to all of us and doesn't require any particular spiritual belief sets or ideologies.
Hi, I'm Jessica Graham, and I'm going to be teaching you some techniques to bring mindfulness into your sex life. Now, I've come across some people who aren't so sure about this mindful sex thing, but there are a lot of really good reasons for bringing mindfulness into sex. One of them is studies have shown that you can actually become more aware of pleasure in your body. You can address issues around sexual dysfunction and erectile dysfunction, and you can have more connection with your partner. When I started meditating, my life really changed very quickly. I started practicing mindfulness meditation and everything changed. Food tasted better, the sky looked more beautiful, massages were more enjoyable. Everything started to take on a kind of shine, a kind of aliveness. And at some point after a meditation retreat, I thought, wouldn't mindfulness be a good combination with sex? If it makes everything feel so good, wouldn't it make sex feel amazing? So I began down this path of bringing mindfulness into my sex life. And pretty quickly, I had what I'd call a sexual awakening. It really became a whole different thing. And now I feel super passionate about sharing mindfulness in terms of sexuality with everyone else. Because if I'm having a good time, I want you to have a good time too. So recently I wrote a book called Good Sex, Getting Off Without Checking Out. And it tells my story of going from kind of shut down and checked out around sex to really awake and present and enjoying it so much more. So the book goes through that and also teaches you meditation techniques like the ones we'll be doing in this lesson. So here are some of my favorite reasons for bringing mindfulness into sex. One, more pleasure. If you're more in touch with your body, you're going to be more in touch with pleasure. Two, meditation, specifically mindfulness meditation, has been shown to lower stress and anxiety. That means the anxiety and stress that many people experience during sex drops out, and you can actually just be present and enjoy the experience. Another reason I love bringing mindfulness into sex is that it creates a deep connection and intimacy with partners. When you're really able to connect and see that other person and feel that other person, in this deep way, sex becomes a completely different experience, and you deserve to have really good sex. So we're going to start with this first lesson on embodied sex. So makes sense that you'd want to be in your body during sex, right? But a lot of people aren't. A lot of people are in their minds thinking about how they look, thinking about their performance, thinking about if they're going to have an orgasm too fast or too slow or at all. And so they're not actually having the experience of being in the body and in the pleasure that's available in the body. So let's start there. Just take a moment to bring some attention to your body. And if you like, you can close your eyes. Good. Begin by just paying attention to the sensations in your face. Notice your eyes, sensations in your mouth and your jaw. How does your neck feel? And what about your shoulders? As we continue to move down the body, I don't want you to try to get rid of anything. So if there's a lot of thoughts coming up, don't worry about that. Just gently come back to the body whenever you find yourself pulled away. And you might come in contact with sensations that don't feel so good, and that's all right. Just greet them with as much acceptance as you can, keeping a curious attitude. Bring your attention to your arms. Feel any sensations in your arms. noticing sensations in your hands. Feel into the chest, the area around the heart and the lungs. Using your physical awareness to really explore these sensations in your body. Moving your attention into your stomach. And now your back, feeling any sensations along the spine, in the muscles of the back. Continue down into your hips and your seat and your pelvic area, noticing any sensations there. Now moving down both of your legs, and into your feet. Now just get a sense of your whole body. Good. Now the great thing about sex is that it's really, really pleasurable. And so let's start tuning our attention into pleasure in the body. We can begin by intentionally relaxing. So release the muscles of your jaw. Release any tension in your shoulders. Relax your chest and your stomach. Relax your hips and your seat. And release the pelvic floor muscles. So these are the muscles you would use to clench if you want it to stop pee midstream. So we're just going to release those muscles. Good. Relaxing down your legs and into your feet. So now I'd like you to smile, just a little smile, and start to notice the sensation of that smile and the sensation of relaxation through your body. Focus on what feels good. Focusing on pleasure in your body. Anytime you're pulled into a thought, gently bring your attention back to any sensation in the body that feels good. Great. You can go ahead and open your eyes. So we've just taken a little tour through the body, getting in touch with physical sensations, and then encouraging, cultivating, and noticing pleasure in the body. So during sex, there's a lot of pleasure. So the most simple way to think about mindful sex is actually being in your body while you're having sex, feeling the sensations of sex. This could be with a partner, and it could also be with yourself. So I'd like to talk you through mindful masturbation. This is something you can do on your own as a practice. Here's how you start. Create a comfortable space to lie down in. Have cushions and blankets. You want to be really comfortable. And then you're going to set a timer for 10 to 15 minutes. Putting away any toys, any video content, any books of erotica, or any other tools that you might use to masturbate normally. All of those go to the side. You're just going to take some time to be with your body and your pleasure. So once the timer begins, start by gently touching your face. And this might feel silly at first. You might be embarrassed. It's okay. Just notice, oh, there's some feelings of embarrassment in my body, maybe some feelings of resistance, and then come back to the exercise. So touch your face. Try touching your face gently, maybe with more pressure. Touch your shoulders and your arms. Touch your chest, the sides of your body, your stomach. Try different pressures, different strokes on your thighs, even on your calves and feet. Do all of this before bringing attention to the genitals. Once you've really had an opportunity to feel into what it's like to touch your own body, then move to masturbation. What I'll invite you to do here is let go of what you would normally do. So whatever your style of masturbation is, for this exercise, put it to the side. Just start to get to know your genitals using your hands. Explore sensation. Really find out what feels good and maybe what doesn't feel so good. That's important too. So during this 10 to 15 minute period, you may or may not have an orgasm. Either way is totally fine. I'd like you to put orgasm to the side rather than striving for it during the exercise. And then, as the timer rings, take a moment, pause. Check out your body. How are you feeling? Are there any emotions? What's going on in the mind? For some people, a lot of emotion can come up, even some sadness or some grief or even anger. And for some people, this is a totally liberating experience and really fun. So how do you feel? And then if you like, do a little writing. I highly recommend stream of consciousness writing. Just write about the experience, how it made you feel, what you discovered about yourself. And then if you want to go back to it, you're welcome to masturbate however you like until you orgasm. But see how you feel. Maybe you won't even need to do that. You might feel completely satisfied already. So of course, you can bring these techniques of basic body awareness, pleasure awareness, and mindfulness during sexual activity into sex with your partner. Ideally, you have a partner who's on board, and you can share the experience before, during, and after. The main idea here will be to keep coming back to your body. So when you get pulled off into thoughts, or maybe just lost in the moment in a way that's not present, not conscious, come back to the sensations in your body. Start to notice how good it actually feels to be engaging sexually with your partner. And maybe take orgasm off the table. Maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. Let it be more about sensation and exploration of pleasure in your body. Before we move on to talking about communication and mindful sex, I'd like to mention a few more things about mindful sex. One, mindful sex doesn't necessarily mean spiritual, candles burning, rose petals sprinkled. It could be just a quickie. So mindful sex isn't just one thing. It's whatever your sexuality looks like, but being more present. Another thing I want to put out there is that there's no right way to do this. All of my teachings on mindful sex are invitations. Ways that you might start to explore bringing mindfulness into your sex life. But there's no one right way. So have fun, be curious, and let go of any perfectionism. One of the number one things that couples come to me with as an issue in their relationship is communication. And there's this quote from Madonna that I love. It goes, "A lot of people don't ask for what they want. That's why they don't get what they want." This is absolutely the case in a lot of the sexual relationships I see. People are afraid to actually express their desires, their fantasies, their needs, and people are not always expressing what they don't want. This is why communication is so very important when it comes to truly consensual sex. Bringing mindfulness into sex absolutely increases the odds that your sex is going to be more pleasurable and 100% consensual. So what comes up for people when thinking about talking to their partner about sex? People feel afraid. They feel embarrassed. They feel shy. They think their partner might not like what they say, or their feelings will be hurt, or they'll be turned off. Mindfulness can absolutely help us to get in touch with these thoughts that come up when we're considering talking to our partners about sex. Observing thought, witnessing thought, recognizing that it's just a flutter of activity, it's just thought, is really, really helpful. This way we're not so afraid to speak our mind because we realize that thoughts are just thoughts. So let's explore this a little bit in a meditation exercise. You can go ahead and close your eyes and bring your attention to the area where mental talk arises for you. For most people, this is around the head. It could be somewhere else for you. Start to notice if any thoughts are arising. There may not be any thoughts, and that's okay. But if there are, simply witness that activity. The coming and going of thought. Some of these thoughts may be auditory, and some may be visual. Just witness. Anytime you get pulled in and you start taking the thoughts personally, see if you can pop back out to a broader perspective, witnessing. Witnessing the activity of the mind. Keep coming back to witnessing. Good. Now I'd like you to bring to mind something about your sexuality that you've been hiding. Something that you could share with your partner or your potential partner. Maybe it's a fantasy. Maybe it's just the way you want to be kissed. Maybe it's a certain sexual position. Bring this to mind. Just honor that in this moment, this fantasy or this sexual desire is true for you. Now I want you to imagine sharing this information with a partner. You might notice that some part of the body tightens up. You might feel the chest tighten or a little knot in your stomach, or you might feel great about it. But either way, just notice the emotional reaction in the body to thinking about sharing this with your partner or a potential partner. Okay, good. Now you can let that go and take a moment just to relax the body, letting go of the exercise. And if your eyes were closed, you can go ahead and open them. Now that you've had a chance to explore the mind and check out some of your fantasies and desires and what it might be like to share them with someone else, I'd like to offer you a writing exercise. So you can do this after the lesson, or you can push pause and do it right now. What you'll do is get a pad of paper and a pen, or you can do it on your computer, and just write out all of your fantasies. Some of these fantasies may be things you've already played out, some of them may be things you'd like to play out, and some of them may be things you never want to do, but still bring up a sort of sexual charge for you. So write out your fantasies and desires without censoring yourself. There's no need to judge yourself or censor yourself when it comes to your sexual desires and fantasies. This is about you exploring you. No one else is ever going to read it. Unless you decide that you'd like to turn it into a sexy letter for your partner, which I completely invite you to do. In our culture, we don't really talk about sex that much. We'd like to think that we do, and if you look at our advertising, it has a lot of sex in it. But I'm talking about actual mindful communication about sex. Talking about pleasure. Talking about consent. Talking about our desires. Talking about actual connection with each other. If we start talking to our partners about what's going on for us sexually, not only are we going to have better sex, we're going to have better relationships, deeper intimacy. And so it might feel scary, it might feel radical to start talking about your fantasies with your partner, to start talking about what you like and don't like. But this is absolutely the key to a wonderful relationship. The relationships that I see flourish and really have amazing connection are the ones where partners are talking and actually talking about sex. So this idea of bringing mindfulness into communication about sex is a really, really powerful thing, not just for your relationship and for your own sexuality, but for our culture in general. Especially these days as we start to lean more into issues of consent, mindful sexual communication becomes incredibly important. I think of consent as the first ingredient for good sex. And along with that is safe sex. I've met so many people who are afraid to have the safe sex conversation. And it's actually quite simple. We just need to say, hey, I've been tested. Have you been tested? If you actually need to disclose something about a STI, you share that information. You take in any information the other person's giving you. And then you move forward. The thing about talking about safe sex is that it means you might be having sex, which is a really good thing. So consent and safe sex, when we bring mindfulness in, can actually be a really fun and easy conversation. I recommend that if you are having any kind of anxiety around having a safe sex talk or negotiating consent, that you take some time to observe and witness the thoughts and the emotions associated with this. Just sit down and bring it to mind. Consider sitting down with a partner and sharing openly about your sexual history and notice what comes up inside you. Maybe there's some fear, some anxiety, maybe a big cluster of thoughts. Use your mindfulness practice to simply observe in a kind and accepting way this arising and passing of emotion and thought. You can continue to practice this way until it's time to have the talk. And then bring your mindfulness practice with you. As you're having a discussion about safe sex, as you're negotiating consent, notice what's happening in your body. How are you feeling? Notice what's happening in your mind. Stay present. Be honest with yourself. Be honest with your partner. This kind of mindful communication is so important and will absolutely add to the wonders that can be had in mindful sex. If your partner brings something up with you, try to receive it with as much kindness and acceptance as possible. Try to let go of any judgment, even if what they're suggesting isn't really your style. Maybe make another suggestion. If you bring a desire, a fantasy, or a sexual need to your partner and you aren't received with kindness, this can be hard. So take a moment to just comfort yourself, soothe yourself, check in with any thoughts or emotions that are arising. And maybe take some time to think about coming back to the conversation when you're not feeling upset. Mindfulness can help you navigate anything that comes up in these conversations, whether it's excitement or heartbreak. So keep leaning on your practice and remembering that coming back to observing thoughts and emotions is a really great way to get some space, especially when you're having an overwhelming experience. Another way that communication really comes in handy with sex is when you're having a dip in libido, when there's not as much sex happening as you might like. And so I suggest to clients to take some time to talk about sex every day. It might be as simple as letting your partner know how beautiful or sexy they look before they leave for work. Or maybe it's sending a sexy text. It could be just having some kind of sexual interaction every day, even if it's not actual sex. Have a longer kiss instead of a peck on the cheek. Maybe a stroke down the back rather than a little pat on the shoulder. Bring sexual communication, both verbal and nonverbal, into your relationship, and usually that will generate more of a sense of sexual energy between the two of you and create potentially a more exciting sexual relationship. Thank you so much for joining me for this first lesson in mindful sex, and I hope you try it out soon.
This lecture contains mature themes and may not be suitable for all audiences. Lecture 16. Beyond the Orgasm. Communicate and Flow.
Let's talk about orgasms. Now, everybody loves orgasms, but most people are so focused on the orgasm that they miss out on a lot of the other pleasure available during sex. So I'm all about the journey, not just the destination. Orgasms can bring up a lot of anxiety for people. Some folks are worried that they're taking too long. Other folks are worried that it's happening too fast, or that it's not happening at all. Mindfulness can help us to get space from the thoughts around our orgasm anxiety and actually get into the pleasure. So you'll see that as we move through mindful sex, again and again, we come back to focusing attention on the body, on pleasure. The mind is there as a tool. We don't want the mind to drag us around, making us feel anxious and stressed out. We want to use the mind to increase the pleasure. So instead of spending the entire time you're having sex thinking about that orgasm, feel the sensations. In tantric sex, all of the emphasis is off of orgasm. Now, I'm a fan of orgasms, so I'm not saying take all the emphasis off orgasms, but let's take a little bit of it off. What would it be like to just connect with your partner without that being the focus? A big piece of this is relaxation, learning to relax into sex, learning to relax into pleasure. And of course, relaxation will help you relax around anxious thoughts. So let's do a little bit of this relaxing together. Begin by closing your eyes. Bring your attention to your forehead. Start to soften and relax all the muscles in the forehead. Now move your attention to your eyebrows and the space between your eyebrows. Relax and soften the eyebrows. Now relax the eyes and all those little muscles around your eyes. Moving your attention to your jaw, invite the jaw to release and relax. Let the mouth drop open a little, letting go. Now relax into your neck and over your shoulders. Let those shoulders release. Relax down both of your arms. And into your hands. As we continue to move down the body, relaxing, you might run into some spots that don't want to relax. And that's okay. Just relax around those areas, letting go of resistance. If you get pulled into thoughts, that's also okay. It's totally normal. When that happens, just gently bring your attention back to your body and back to relaxing. Continuing to relax into your chest. And relaxing the solar plexus area. And continuing down into the rest of your abdomen. Relaxing, softening, letting go. You can now start to relax your back. If you're sitting up, just use the muscles you need to and invite all the rest of those muscles to release and relax. Now bring your attention to your hips, relaxing the hips, allowing the hips to widen. Bringing attention to your seat, relaxing all around the tailbone. And now, very important, bring your attention to the pelvic area, to the muscles of the pelvic floor and to the genitals. Relax and release. Letting go. Now invite that relaxation to continue to move down both of your legs. And into your feet. Now take a moment and scan through your body and notice anywhere that might have tightened back up. This could be one of the spots where you personally hold a lot of tension and stress in the body. So paying attention to this area and see if you can release it and relax it a little bit more. This might also be a spot that tends to tighten up during sex. So while having sex, you can be practicing this exercise, releasing and relaxing. Good. As you're ready, you can open your eyes as we come to the end of this meditation. So the idea here is that you bring this relaxation practice into sex. So many people have a lot of tension going on while they're having sex, and that actually reduces the possibility for pleasure. More relaxation means more blood flow, means more pleasure. So, bringing this in while you're having any kind of sexual activity, including sex with yourself, can make sex feel so much better. This is also an antidote to some of that anxiety that can come up around orgasm. I sometimes recommend to clients practicing relaxation together before having sex. And of course, as you're doing this, if you become aware of thoughts and emotions, you can acknowledge them and notice, oh, there's some thoughts, there's some emotions, and then return to relaxation. And of course, relaxation is very pleasurable, so this will also continue to tune you into pleasure in your body. So try it out. If you have a partner, sit down with them before sex, and go through this exercise of relaxing from your head to your toes, paying special attention to those areas you've identified that you personally hold tension and stress, and also remembering to relax in the pelvic area. Bringing this kind of relaxation into sex is a way that mindfulness can really increase the pleasure and lower the anxiety. Here are a few tips for orgasm issues that I hear about. Oftentimes, I hear from men that they're worried about orgasming too quickly. And so something you can play around with on your own is the start-stop method. And you can bring your meditation and mindfulness practice into this. So you'll begin pleasuring yourself, and right before you think you're about to orgasm, you'll stop and you'll take a moment and breathe. Feel the sensations in your body. Notice the thoughts. Notice the emotions. There might be some frustration. That's okay. Just acknowledge it. Notice it. And then you can begin to pleasure yourself again. And I would suggest that you try this for 10 to 15 minutes, really getting in touch with what it's like to go to the brink and pause and feel the body and then come back to pleasure. Now, you can do this with a partner as well. I often suggest trying it on your own first, and then bringing it into sex with your partner. What I hear most often from women is that they have anxiety about not orgasming fast enough.